On 11.16 SEN, Melbourne's home of footy, The Science of Sport, with Craig Harper, Jackie Lada and Mark Fabreo.
Well, good morning, Melbourne. Good morning, Jackie Lada. Welcome to The Science of Sport, everyone. This is our last little instalment for this part of the year. We'll be back later in the year, of course, post-footy season. At 7 minutes past 10, this is a show where we talk health and wellness and sports science and fitness and psychology and all the stuff around that. And we invite you every week to get on board the conversation, train 9429 1116. If you've got a topic that you would like us to explore, an idea, a thought, a question that you might like answered, 0433 981 116 is the SMS. Jackie Lada joins me every week. She's one of Australia's premier sports psychologist based out of Olympic Park here in Melbourne, enjoys water sports and meeting people. She's a Pisces looking for love. Good morning, Jackie.
Some of that's correct, some incorrect, but it sounded impressive.
That's right. Contestant number seven.
It's been a very quick summer. It feels like it's from when we did the first show to the last show now.
Feels like it's flown.
Yeah.
And of course, we should mention Professor Mark Fabreo is in absentia. He would like to be here. He tried to be here, but he got waylaid in Sydney. He, of course, is an integral part of the program, but not here. But we'll review his contract after this week, and we'll see whether or not we'll get him back on board for next season. At this point in time, he's a 50-50, and Mark,
wow.
If you're listening, we're open to bribes. So,
am I part of the review committee, or... You, or are you the review committee?
No, you and I. You,
it's, right,
it's a,
okay.
It's a fitty fitty.
Yeah, okay.
We're the panel. We're the review panel.
We've never had a review before, but okay, let's do one now.
That's exactly right. So we're kind of, we're not really heading out of summer. We are. It doesn't seem like we're heading out of
March
summer at the moment.
March has been very warm.
And we're heading into autumn, winter. And, you know, with that comes a lot of challenges, I guess. Well, no more than summer, but different kind of challenges in looking after our health and our head and our body in terms of making sure we function as well as we can. What are some of the things that as we move out of the warmer weather into the colder weather and into, you know, where we're perhaps indoors more, Jack, that we need to negotiate and consider?
Well, I'd say the number one thing is your language around the weather changes. I've already heard people saying, oh, I hate daylight savings is finishing in 2 weeks. I hate it when it gets dark, which is already getting pretty dark. Mm. You know, I hate the cold. Or I struggle with this or, you know, and especially too when we have days like today where it's so nice to be able to have the afternoon where you can sit out in a park under a tree or do some things outside because of that warmth. So I think the language is, I've already noticed people starting to change that.
Where does that come from? Why do we, like, from your perspective as a psychologist, why do we do that? Like, why do we bring that to, like, what is the point of saying that to someone? It changes nothing. Like, it doesn't fix anything or help anything or create any positive outcome. So why do we do it?
I think a lot of people, it's habit. I think they actually don't like the cold weather, so they start to talk about it. What I don't think people think about enough is when you start saying that a few months out, like right now, we're in really great weather, and we have been all March, which I think we always get pretty good weather in March.
Yeah.
So we're not at that point right yet, but what people should be looking at is, okay, there's going to be a change in the weather, which I can't control, but what can I control? And what I can control is myself. So, okay, you know, if it's not raining, yes, it might be a little bit colder, but dress appropriately. You live in Melbourne. It's not like it's a surprise that it's going to get colder. So you've just got to be prepared. I think it's just the brain is wired to be more negative than positive anyway because it protects us. But I just think people are not accountable enough to themselves or aware of the impact that that's having. 3 months of saying, like we're in autumn, 3 months of saying, oh, I hate the cold and, you know, daylight savings. Well, think about the impact you're going to have on everyone else around you as well.
And I think you make a really interesting point, which is, you know, what's in your control and what's not in your control. And I always say, as you do, I'm sure, in your words, like control your controllables.
Yep.
And I say to people, invest your mental and emotional energy where you'll get the best return.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, bitching about the weather or your genetics or some other person or what happened last week or last month or last year, not a great use of your time, not a great use of your energy, generally doesn't produce anything positive. And that's easy to say, but how do we... I was talking to somebody yesterday. I did an event here in Melbourne. I was talking to a lady afterwards, and she was talking to me about her self-talk and her self-loathing. Mm-hmm. She's like, I'm a self-loather. I'm always putting myself down. I think I'm, and I go,
so
you
she's
know,
aware.
She's aware, which is good, but she shoots herself in the foot.
Mm-hmm.
You know, she's constantly talking herself into
labeling
failure
herself.
or stagnation because. You know, she won't take a chance, she won't take a risk, and she won't step up, you know, but she wants to do all of that. How do we shift that internal dialogue? And I know that we're not going to have this chat now and we'll fix it by tomorrow lunchtime, but for people who have that internal monologue that's pretty self-destructive and self-loathing, which is a lot of people, I'm this, I'm that, I'm not good enough, I'm not pretty enough, I'm not smart enough, I'm not anything enough. Is there a strategy that is effective at changing that over time?
Well, your basic rule is don't tell me what you don't want to do. Tell me what you do want to do. That's your first starting point, because if I said to you, don't think about an elephant, that's the first thing you're going to think of.
Yeah.
But if I don't want you to think about an elephant, I should have said to you, think about a giraffe. And by making you think about the giraffe, I've kept you away from thinking about the elephant. That's the basics of it. But then it's about saying, okay, what am I going to focus on, and not trying to be ridiculously over the top. Because I think that one of the big mistakes that I see regularly is if you say you can't do something, that's a result, and you don't get to control results. You can only influence them, right? Particularly if there's other people involved. If I'm then saying to you, yes, you can, I'm also focusing on a result, but I'm just on the other end of it. Neither one gives you any more feeling of being in control. So if you're always saying, I can't, and I just go the complete opposite, we're going around in circles and we're not getting any solutions either way. Whereas what I should be saying to you is, okay, find something right now. What can you control right now? In the next 10 minutes, what have you got control over? And it might be, you know what, I'm going to go and just step outside and take a breath and get some fresh air. I can, instead of having a coffee, I'm going to go and have a glass of water. Or something. And it sounds very, very basic, but I think if you start with too much, it's like people who set goals and they've got four things they want to change at once. And these four things have all been a problem for so long. Like, you can't do that if you're trying to do it when you're also trying to work or have your family or do all those other things. We don't have the time. The brain does have a limit as to how much it can cope with in one go. And change is hard.
And I think also, we need to be willing to be able to do the things that scare us or do the things that are uncomfortable. And I think one of the challenges for us is that we're in some ways hardwired for safety and comfort and familiarity. And
absolutely,
we want to change, of course. We want to learn and grow and evolve and get leaner and get stronger and be more productive and proactive and effective and a new and improved version of us, whatever that means for the individual. But at the same time, I don't want to leave this little box I've created for myself. So I was also having a conversation yesterday with another lady, and she was telling me that she's scared of XYZ. I want to do this, but I'm scared. I go, what are you scared of? She goes, you know, da-da-da. And I go, okay, so just do it anyway. And she's like, what? I go, it's okay to be scared.
Yeah,
like
absolutely.
It's okay as long as
as long as you're not putting yourself in danger.
But there's
something. There's
smart fear, like don't put your hand in the fire, and there's that self-limiting fear, which, well, I know that, you know, if you only ever do the things that are comfortable or familiar or safe, or you only ever do the things that don't daunt you or scare you at all, it's going to be a very slow grind in terms of your personal development and growth as an athlete or as a whatever it is that you want to do. And so, you know, accepting that some things will be hard, like a lot of the things that we need to do are not the things that we want to do.
Yep. And sometimes the things that we need to do don't always feel the best, but they're still the right thing. And I use a really basic example is saying, you know, for most parents, they don't enjoy having to punish their child. But they know they need to do that to teach them that that wasn't safe or that's not okay or you need to be accountable for this. But I'm sure it's not, you know, enjoyable when the kids are turning around going, I hate you or whatever. But they're doing it because they know that's the right thing to do, but it feels terrible for them.
94291116. What's the thing in your world? It might be a health thing, a fitness thing. It might be a mindset thing. It might be something more practical and tangible and measurable. What's the thing in your world that you need to change and the thing that you've been avoiding? Maybe we can workshop that with you.
And the other side of it is too, we were talking last week and you and I spoke briefly after the show about this. You can go from the other end as well, because you mentioned last week, and you're probably one of the cleanest, most straight down the line eaters I've ever known. Like you're fairly rigid. And you said to me last week, I'm actually starting to relax a little bit
and
having a few little treats.
I am.
So when we're talking about change, the fear can also come from the other end where someone has, whether it be they've lost all of that weight and now they're so scared to put it back on that they won't let themselves even enjoy food anymore. Mm. They've gone the complete opposite. So, you know, it'd be good to hear from people too who have gone one way, like yourself, and then gone, it's taken a long time and it's hard to let myself have some treats every now and then.
And the thing too, and Christine and Temple, so we're coming to you very soon. If you'd like to join her, 94291116, when you've been in a certain place, like when I was a fat kid, right, and you have all of these phobias around this, and even a fat adult when I was in my early 20s, then you do something that works and you take certain things out of your diet or out of your life that were stumbling blocks for you.
Yep.
Then you have a mental block about ever even going near the cheesecake door. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And so for me, I've shied away from it.
Yeah.
But it's. I think it's, you know, we talk about food and the relationship that we have with food. And so for me, food's not the problem. It was my behavior around food and my thinking around food. And I think for a lot of people, that's their challenge. You know, they understand, for the most part, what they should and shouldn't put in their mouth. But at some stage, there's just a control issue. Let's go to Christine. Hi, Christine. Thanks for joining us.
Oh.
Hello, Christine. She's not there. Well, we'll come back to her in a moment. Is she back? Christine, are you there?
I am.
Oh, hello.
Oh, thought we'd lost you. I was starting to panic.
I've lost 52 kilo over, you know, 7 years ago, and I've kept it off, but I still have those niggly little feelings of, oh, God, I'm going to put it back on. I run a hell of a lot, and I've only just recently been able to not think about scales and the fear of it because I just know I'm right. But the other thing I was thinking was I found that one of the things that works for me that stops me stressing and getting depressed about things is just thinking about process. Like when I run, I just count or I write things for my work in my head. Like it's the actual, rather than stressing about the outcome all the time, I'm just going to do the most. I know you think I'm mad, but just I'm going to count to 5,000. It's making your brain just go through step by step by step by step of something. And it's automatically, it's that idea, you said, focusing on something really easy.
Yep.
Easy that you know you can kind of do, and it's inane and all the rest of it, but forcing yourself to do it and going, I am going to count to 1,000, and that's it. Or I'm going to, as I said, there's a whole lot of little things you can do, or I'm going to actually think of all the names of my whatever it is over a period. It's those sorts of things that train your brain to think of process rather than these outrageous things that you can kind of think about.
And it's interesting that Christine raises a point where she said to us, you know, you might think I'm mad. I hear that a lot. And if something works for you, it's not crazy. I don't care. When I talk to people about the language that they use, It's not the words, it's the impact the words have. If those words have a positive impact for you, then they're okay. But I might use the same words and they have a negative impact for me. So for me, those words are not okay. So it's not about, you know, we don't think you're crazy at all. You've obviously found a system that works for you, which is fantastic. And 52 kilos is that no mean
feat. That's unbelievable. And the thing that you've highlighted also, Christine, is that different things work for different people. And so whether or not that's from a psychological or a physiological perspective, we know that there's no universal approach or universal kind of panacea. So it's trying to listen to your body and listen to your head and pay attention to your results and see what works for you internally, that is emotionally and mentally, but also externally, so practically in the real world, what works for you. Congratulations on your results.
Yeah, well done.
Thank you very much.
Thanks, Christine. Keep listening. Off the SMS.
Oh, I won't read it. I'll read it.
All right, go on.
Okay, so obviously we're missing Mark this morning, so we've got an SMS. I'm all for Mark returning. However, you should consider incorporating a fine system, i.e. coffees, for using the words a recent study or answers to questions with a greater than 2-minute monologue. Mark is very knowledgeable and he does get very excited.
Well, once he mounts that soapbox, it's hard to get him down. But we do love him. Off the SMS also, the best way to change attitude is to practice gratitude. And it is funny, you know, that I always say to people, do a treasure hunt on your life just to see what's great about your life. Because we do have a capacity and a tendency, some of us sometimes, to obsess about the one or two not so great things while overlooking the 98 great things in our life.
Yeah, and look, I think the thing is though that whilst gratitude is important, it's not that easy, and it's only one component of changing an attitude. Like, you know, we hear a lot about positive psychology and things these days, and it has its place. But if you're someone who has gone through a really significant trauma or something you've battled for years and years, it's not that simple. Like, it's one component. You have to have, like you said, addressing the fears as well. You have to have a look at the support networks that somebody has. You have to have a look at the setbacks that they've experienced, what's in their lifestyle and stuff as well. So yes, gratitude's really important, but it's certainly not one of the only things that we'd be using. It's great for if you're what we call the worried well.
I want to talk to you about, we'll go to a break in a minute, but I want to talk to you about this notion of letting go. You know, there's this is not psychology, this is more philosophy, but in Eastern thinking or Eastern philosophy, part of their teaching is that happiness comes from letting go of that which makes you unhappy, right?
Mm-hmm.
And somebody that I'm reasonably close to at the moment is really sick, and they've been battling multiple myeloma for a while, and they're at the end of their journey.
And that's a tough one.
And yeah, and very, very limited time,
yep.
Like less than 2 weeks.
Yep.
And, you know, there wasn't a struggle, but there was this, you know, really fighting this thing and fighting and still with a positive attitude. But then it got to a point where, okay, well, this is a foregone conclusion.
Yeah.
And then that person, there was a shift and they just let go. And it was like in the letting go, you know, there was just an increased level of calm and happiness.
Yeah.
And like that anxiety is gone.
Yep.
That anxiety and I know that's easier said than done, but is there something, you know, yes, we work towards happiness and we manipulate these variables and we focus on this and we address that and we da 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 da. And we, you know, we follow this strategy and we have a plan and we talk to Jackie and we talk to Craig. But is there something a bit more, let's not say spiritual, but down in that space where, forget your training and my training, but just as a human being, where you get to a point where maybe you just let go of something?
Yep. Yeah. And I think obviously that changes for everybody. Sometimes you just have to ask yourself, you know, what? I think we don't necessarily always ask ourselves, what am I fighting for here?
Mm.
It's like holding a grudge.
Mm.
Well, the person who it impacts the most is not the person you've got the grudge against. It's the person holding the grudge as well. And you just sit there going, you know what? And I've certainly made some decisions in my life over the years where I've just gone, as much as somebody may have hurt me or disappointed me or impacted me, I'm just like, you know what? I just can't be bothered fighting this. I won't have that person in my life, or that's not a battle that I just have the time for. And what you say, I think I've seen it happen a lot, but people have to get to a certain point in their own journey where they can just do that. But it definitely exists, and there is no science behind it. It's just that person's reached a point where they just say, I'm okay with where this is now.
Malcolm Gladwell has got a book called The Tipping Point, which is very famous book.
I haven't read it, but I know of that.
It's really interesting. And he's really talking about trends and things where things go from, you know, nearly successful to wildly successful and but he talks about how things just get to a point where something happens. And this is kind of relates, you know, and I've had that too in because I was a, I don't know if anyone else resonates with this, but because I was an only child and I was a, without boring everyone, fat kid and all that stuff, there was a lot of insecurity and I was always looking for approval and always, and even into my 20s, and I got to the point where I was just exhausted of being this people pleaser and trying to keep everyone in the world happy and make everything awesome and fix everything. I just went, I can't do it. And I literally remember the day I just was having a bit of a meltdown by myself because I owned a business, I had staff, I was doing lots of stuff. Yeah. I was externally successful but internally dying.
Yep.
And I just went, I can't do it. And I want to turn into a mongrel, but I just can't keep doing this. And something clicked and it was like relief. And that was pretty much the last time where I went, nah. Like, I'm still going to be a good human being. I'm going to care. I'm going to express empathy. But I can't just carry all this stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
And it wasn't like, oh, I had a plan or I went and spoke to somebody. There was just something that just shifted internally. And, you know, maybe we need to get to that point. Mm. We're going to go to break. When we come back, we're going to talk about more body stuff, a bit of food, a bit of getting in shape, maintaining shape through winter. If you've got any questions, we'll talk about the head stuff as well. But all around getting in shape physically and maintaining that through winter, and maybe moving towards a better health state for you.
On 1116 SEN, Melbourne's home of footy, The Science of Sport, with Craig Harper, Jackie Lada and Mark Fabreo.
Welcome back to Melbourne's home of sports. It is Science of Sport every Sunday between 10 and 11 through the summer. 6 months or so we're here. This is the final instalment for the 2017 summer. We'll be back towards the end of the year doing the same thing. Somebody asked me yesterday, do you still do your show on SEN on Sundays? I said, yeah. And they said, I've never heard it. I've heard about it. What's it about? And I said, it's really about, if I had to give one term or sentence, I'd say it's really about self-management. Mm-hmm. Is you managing you in the middle of your sport or your life or your relationships or your career? Is us, Jackie and I and Mark, when he's here every 15th week, trying to help you, help us to help me to help you? Well, no, really. It is about Mark every 15th week. But just that trying to get the most out of yourself, isn't that something that we all want?
Yeah, I think so. But we were talking before about change and yes. How hard it is for you. And don't tell me like we know the weight problems and all that all sort right, of stuff, right? So go something completely different, maybe from a life perspective.
Don't tell me what to do.
Well, I am because I'm asking the question.
All right.
What is something that you have as a lifestyle thing really been the biggest thing to change or the thing that's taken you the longest?
To what? To change?
To change.
The thing that's taken me the longest to change is my relationship with work and the way that I work.
Yep.
And getting having a healthy relationship with how I my career and how I work and do business. And for a long time, I was quite obsessive and a perfectionist. I would not let people do things.
That you thought you could do yourself.
I go, well, right. Why would I let them do that at 7 out of 10 when I can do it at a 9 out of 10?
Yep.
Maybe that was just my ego.
That's a lot of pressure, isn't it?
Yeah, and because I had businesses for a long time. But I also, you know, one of the things that I have this conversation a lot with people, I don't know if you do, but is trying to figure out, you know, we spend so much of our life working. And I had a moment in my 30s where I won't bore you with it, but I just had a massive moment where I went, what do I actually want to do with, in terms of my career and my job and the majority of my waking hours, what do I want to do with the rest of my life? Do I want to walk around a gym floor and kind of, you know, talk to people and hand dumbbells and, you know, clean the bog and put the toilet roll on and vacuum the floor and set up another gym? And not, that's not bad if that, but I did that
if that's
for.
That's what you want to
is
do.
This, do I want 50 years of this? And the answer was, I don't. Some people would, and that's their perfect life, but for me, it wasn't.
Yep.
So just trying to get, you know, how we kind of with our career and therefore our emotional and mental health, you know, we get into this routine, which isn't necessarily a great routine. It's just a routine. And
but
you wake
you've developed that identity around that too, which is why it's complicated.
That is right. And then you go, well, if I'm not this guy who set up the, if I kind of developed personal training in Australia to an extent and set up this and did that, and I have this brand and this identity as this fitness bloke or whatever, and then if I step away from that, who am I and what am I? And so for me, yeah, that was the thing, is trying to get clarity just about what I wanted to do with my career rather than, you know, just follow this pre kind of set course that had been created for me. Mm. Yeah, and that you know, that's been an interesting exploration, trying to figure out
how. Do you feel like you've nailed it?
Yeah, I do. I'm still a work in progress, but, you know, like I love working with people around all of the performance variables. How do we create change, whether or not it's with a business or a team, sporting club, an individual, a guy in prison, an addict, an alcoholic? You know, what do you want your life to look like? What's working? What's not working with your body, with your, you know, with your food, with your mind, with all of that stuff? That just fascinates me because I feel like I'm not a very talented person, and I don't say that with false humility, but I feel like I think clearly and I have a big work ethic, mm-hmm. and I'm interested to see what I can get out of me. And I'm just as interested to see what I can help people get out of themselves in terms of exploring their potential. Like, just imagine what you can do with that body or with that talent or with that skill or with that opportunity or with that resource if you got fear out of the way.
But it's amazing how many people will put themselves down and yet everyone else around them says, oh, it frustrates me that they can't see how amazing they are
Correct.
At this or how good they are at this. Or, you know, I have a lot of males that will come in and they constantly talk about how amazing their partners are with the kids and running a household and all that. But then you speak to the partner and they're like, well, I don't really do anything. I'm like, oh, yes, you do. Like, it doesn't matter whether we're talking work as in an employment situation or in your personal life, but those around us can sit there and admire us. And you go to a funeral and you hear all these amazing things about that person.
Yeah.
And you go, that person never through their life stopped to have a look at some of that stuff themselves. And I had to do a exercise when I was going through uni, and it was in a grief and loss subject. And we had to write our own eulogy. And then you had to look at it and say,
wow.
Yeah, and that was a confronting exercise. But it was, and I was, at the time I went, okay, well, it was in my early 20s. I'm like, what is this about? I'm hoping this is not going to come to fruition soon. And then when we went back, we were told, okay, have a look through that. If something happened to you tomorrow, could you hand this piece of paper over and someone would be able to read it and it would be accurate? And so it made us look at, okay, which parts of how I want to be remembered and how I want people to see me, what am I doing about those things? If I'm saying I'm a family person but I never see my family, well, you know, if you want to be remembered that way, you better get onto it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So it was a really good self-awareness and self-reflective tool. It was an interesting exercise and very confronting, but it's something I think that I got a lot of value out of.
There's a term that when we're talking about our life and what we do with it, there's this term that gets thrown around a lot, which is life purpose. And so many people go to me, I don't know what my life purpose is. I'm like, well, I don't.
No.
Well, hang on. I've just opened my bottom drawer. Here it is.
There's no book on it either.
Sally, there it is. Oh, hang on. Oh, you're meant to be an astronaut. Well, I think the thing is that and we had this chat yesterday, the group and I, about finding life purpose. And a couple of things that spring to mind. Firstly, who created that notion? Like, we have a purpose. Well, maybe we have 10 purposes. Mm-hmm. Or maybe my life purpose when I'm 25 isn't the same when I'm 35 or 45. So for me, the notion of having a single life purpose that never changes, and one, you've got to find that, and two, you've got to live that, and three, it can never be, it's very limiting and very unrealistic.
And you're a different person at different stages in your life, so your purpose, of course, is going to change.
And also the notion that it's somehow preordained.
Yeah.
And you need to, like, it's set. It's set in the gods, it's set in the heavens, and you need to find out what it is.
But it's in our daily language where, you know, I say, well, you have to do this. Mm. Why?
Mm.
Why do I have to do this?
Mm.
Like, you know, and it is, health and fitness, I think, is one of those areas where we get told a lot, you know, you have to look like this. And there's, you know, you speak to the really good dietitians and stuff that are out there and the psychologists and that now, and we're saying, you don't have, doesn't matter what size you are, you can be healthy and still be a little bit, you can be a bigger person. You can be unhealthy and be a very skinny person.
Correct.
So it's about saying, well, what am I doing with what I've got? Mm. And can I make it the best version that I can make it? But your purpose will change depending on what stage of life you're in. Like if you've got little kids, purpose is looking after those little kids and protecting them and whatever. When they become adults themselves, you're still a parent, but your purpose has changed because you haven't got as much dependent responsibility. Mm. Like if you start off in a job and you've got four people above you and then in 15 years' time you're now the top person, that's changed as well. It's a different purpose. You got to go with it and be prepared to know that it's okay not to have to be perfect in those positions.
100%. And don't look to other people for your purpose. How many people want someone else to tell them what...
what should I do here?
Yeah, for sure, figure it out yourself. But, I mean, you were talking about people being... a bit bigger but healthy, and other people having being trimmer but being not so healthy. But you have worked with, and I have worked with, many people who would have what would be typically considered to be amazing physiques, mm-hmm. males and females in these incredible bodies, who are emotional train wrecks.
Mm-hmm.
So externally awesome, internally just a ship without a rudder.
Yeah,
and so. It's trying to, you know, it's great to be in great shape physically, but it's also good to be in good shape, mentally and emotionally, and trying to get that synergy, that balance between, you know, what I am and what I'm not. What I'm not is a body. And when I find my sense, and in our culture, I know we're getting deep now, but because especially with some younger people where the selfie generation and the Instagram generation.
External validation.
Here's photo number 875,000 of me doing essentially the same pose, wearing not much. Please give me some likes.
Yep.
And that external validation that you just mentioned, it's killing us.
Yeah, I have young people come into to see me, and I'm not joking with this, and it really, not that it doesn't upset me, it makes me sad. Because they will sit there and they'll say, I don't understand. My friend puts one picture up every second week and gets all of these likes. And I do the same thing and I only get 5 likes.
Yeah.
You know, and this notion of friends on Facebook, you don't know them, but it is. We've become, you know, when it's called social media, it's actually antisocial because most people are doing it when they're on their own.
Oh, you should write an article, Anti-Social Media by Jay Lauder. 18 minutes to 11 o'clock. It is the Science Sport, Jackie Lauder, Craig Harper. The team out there just doing beautifully well. Jackie, our producer, has written a question, which I'm going to share, and maybe you can jump in on the other side of this. Have any listeners gained clarity and changed career significantly, made major changes over the last little while?
Good question.
Have you kind of hit the pause button on your career and maybe jumped into something completely different where you went, nah, what I'm doing isn't really floating my boat. I think what I need to do is start my own landscaping business. I don't like being an accountant or something like that. I feel good. I knew
that I wouldn't. On 1116 SEN, Melbourne's home of footy, The Science of Sport, with Craig Harper, Jackie Lauder and Mark Fabreo.
Welcome back to The Science Sport. Jackie Lauder, Craig Harper here. Every Sunday over the summer, and we're just about done and dusted for this instalment. We'll be back post-footy season. Well, we may not be. I think we will be. We're very good and very affordable. well, we'll see. We'll see what happens. Let's go to Paul in Mount Eliza who wants a chat. G'day, Paul. Thanks for joining us.
Yeah, catch cry is St. Paul from Mount Eliza, a Mad St. Kilda supporter.
St. Paul, thank you for joining us.
That's all right. I actually fit the criteria exactly what you're talking about. I'm 60 years of age, had been a qualified chef for 40 years.
Wow.
Dabbled in the car wash industry
way
back in 1990, and 2.5 years ago I set up a mobile hand car wash and detailing business. And it is absolutely flying and complete lifestyle change. Took the pressure off because being a chef is highly stressful.
Yeah.
And, went through a whole series of things in my life. I actually am a widow and it just, the message I'm trying to get across is that it's never too late.
Yeah.
And if you're really dedicated to what you think you can achieve, it's amazing what you can achieve. And I, you know, I've raised three kids and done it all, been depressed, been to hell and back, but somehow I've got through. Mm. And without floating my own boat, I'm very proud of what where I am today. So,
well, mate, you've done beautifully.
Thank you. And it's about, you know, just putting that message out there that you can achieve whatever you set your mind to, and it's not about maybe taking alcohol or drugs to try and get through, but about facing what you need to in life, and, hey, guess what?
That works out.
Mate, give your business a quick pump. What's it called?
It's called Posh Wash Mobile Car Detailing.
Posh Wash. I like it.
Posh Wash, yes.
And can I ask you, Paul, why, like, when you made that change, the people around you, were they supportive?
Absolutely. I had a very long conversation with my sister, who I'm very close to, and it was about, you know, I got carted off to hospital in an ambulance after working in the food game and the stress of it, and made a decision right there and then that I was going to do something to change my life. That I didn't want my kids to be parentless, basically.
Yep.
And, so had a conversation, and I came up with the concept and the name and the idea, and the rest is history, and it's the best thing I've ever done.
Well, mate, that's a beautiful contribution to what we're talking about, and a great example of even at an older age going, all right, well, after 40 years, so...
And that's hard when you've been doing something for longer. That change is often much harder when you're younger and you've got all these years of working ahead. You can look at it and say, oh, I can work my way through.
Yeah.
But that's an impressive story.
You know, Jackie's just put up an interesting term, the other Jackie, the blonde Jackie, not the brunette Jackie. Blonde Jackie's put up on the on the screen. What about frenemies? Those people who are friends in inverted commas, but they actually want you to fail. I love that. Is so true, though.
Yeah.
People that I've coached over the years, mostly the people who will try to derail them or sabotage them, or even
are close to
the
them.
Ones that will resent, are the people that are close, because for some weird reason, and you're going to tell us the reason because you're the psychologist, why do some people want you to fail? Why do some of the people close to you want you to fail?
Because they see you as a threat and stopping them succeeding. I think it's pretty close to that. And that's an insecurity. That's a massive insecurity in those people. And they need to obviously address that, because, you know, you start sabotaging the people around you and not appreciating what they've been able to give you. And those people often, they won't go and succeed and be better than you anyway, because they're coming at it from completely the wrong angle. But you're a threat to them, and they see their own insecurities. And if they make you feel bad or, you know, don't support you, it makes them feel better. It's like a bully. That's exactly what a bully is. A bully is usually the one with more serious issues.
Just quickly off the SMS, Jack and Craig, how important is setting routines in life like food, sleep and exercise? Simon, I'm going to say super important, especially those things that are in alignment with your values and your goals. You know, so I always say to people, what are the things that you want to do and create and achieve? And then what are the behaviours based on that need to be set in stone for you? So habits, non-negotiables. So rather than sometimes behaviors, all the time habits. And that's, so when we, you know, say, what do you want your body to look like, your life to look like, your relationships to look like, your career to look like, get clarity on that. And then off the back of that, say, all right, well, with that in mind, what needs to be non-negotiable? Because if I'm only doing the things that work when I'm motivated or in the zone, I'm never going to get there. We're going to go to a break. It's 8 minutes to 11 o'clock. You're listening to The Science Sport. Jackie Lauder, Craig Harper. We'll be back on the other side of this.
On 1116 SEN, Melbourne's home of footy, The Science of Sport, with Craig Harper, Jackie Lauder and Mark Fabreo. So good.
I got you. All righty. Home straight, 5 minutes to 11 o'clock, The Science of Sport. Let's go to Daniel in Yarra Glen. Hey, Daniel, thanks for joining us.
Yep.
Hello. No, Daniel's gone. He's gone. All right, that's cool. We've got a bunch of SMSs, so we're heading off in about 5 minutes. We'll be back in 6 months. I'll be around on Monday nights with Finey between 9 and 10, however. But in terms of this show, we'll be back probably the week after the grand final.
Day after.
The day after, usually. Somebody's written, "You are breaking my routine. Hear you in 6 months." And Simon said, "Thanks for all your support over the last 6 months, guys. You got me through a tough time. See you Thursday, Jack."
I know who that is.
Jackie's boyfriend. Jackie said, "Jackie, how do you overcome commitment phobia?" We're not even opening that door, so I don't want the answer. And also, we've got an interesting one here. We're talking about social media, and you labelled it anti-social media, which is clever. Re-anti-social media. I'm on the autism spectrum, and I need quiet time and recharge time. Social media enables me to socialise and share my experience in my own way. Thanks for sharing that. That's really interesting.
Yeah, and I guess when I was talking about the majority of the population. I do see the advantages in that situation, and it's a good point to raise.
It is. And also from Stephen in Carrara at Queensland, "We got your message. Love the show." And he would like it to be an ongoing thing. Well, when I'm the boss of the world, when I'm working towards it, Stephen, we'll be on 2 hours every week.
Yeah.
But no, we'll be back at the end of the year, and we appreciate the time we get here. Lee and Lilydale, going to miss you guys. You're my motivation. Thank you so much. It's been fun, and we really enjoy what we do here, and we certainly don't do it for the Stan Cash. We do it because we love the opportunity that SEN give us. We appreciate it. And also, you know, both of us enjoy the medium of radio, and it helps us to share a bit of a message that we're both passionate about. What are you going to be doing over winter?
For me?
Are you starting a new career like landscaping or car detailing?
No, I'm not starting a new career. This is my first official season with Melbourne Storm, so rugby is pretty much on the agenda for me this year. Mm. And then obviously I do a lot with swimming as well, so I'll keep doing that. And then I'll be down at Olympic Park just doing my day-to-day consulting, which is what I love.
And people can come and see you?
Just ring Olympic Park Sports Medicine Centre. We're down at Amy Park, and make time. Love to see you. Come down.
If people want to, do you have any, before we go, do you have any books or resources or websites that, for people who are going, "I struggle a bit with the keeping my head where it needs to be" thing? I mean, I know there's a million books, but is there anything that Jackie Lauder advises where this is just a no-brainer, it's pretty understandable to help us stay, you know, in the kind of headspace that we need to?
Yeah, there's some really good ones. What I can do is on our Facebook page, I can keep updating that over the off season for us. Mm. So there's always some good books around, you know, books like Bounce. I don't know if you've ever read that, which talks about how to be the best at what you can be and compares Mozart and Federer and looks at all these successful people, outliers. If we're talking about just generic learning about skills, but why don't we do that? I'll do that over the break, is keep putting some good books up and resources.
And Jackie, our producer, put up Headspace, which I think that's a website, that's an organisation, is it, Jackie? Yes, that has a website. And also Smiling Mind, is that a book?
No, Smiling Mind is an app. It's like a mindfulness app, which is really good because you can go from level 0 up to level 10. You basically pace yourself with learning different, whether it be breathing or body scanning. So it's a mindfulness app.
And I think that's the challenge, is to consciously and proactively, you know, do things and create a structure and create a process. You're not going to accidentally succeed or accidentally transform.
No.
But
what have you got on for the year?
Just more of the same. Fair bit of. I'm actually going to Ireland in June.
Oh, wow.
I'm going to Ireland in June.
Are you having a holiday?
Nope. I'm going to talk to people. No, I will have an island. I will have an island in holiday.
You probably will have an island.
I will have a holiday. Coming up after 11 o'clock, it is the first serve with BP. So you can get your tennis fix. Thanks, boys and girls. Enjoyed it. Jackie, our producer, thank you very much for your help through the season. You've been fabulous. Enjoy the winter, folks. We'll see you in a few months.
Yep. Thanks to Jono and Mikey all through the season as well. And obviously Mark.
Perfect. Of course, Mark Fabreo. See you next time.